Hello and welcome to Habemus Papam, episode 53, St. John the First.
Dear brothers and sisters, annuncio vobis.
Annuncio vobis.
Annuncio vobis gaudium magnum.
Gaudium magnum.
Gaudium magnum.
Habemus Papam.
Hey everyone, let's get right into it. Last week, St. Hormisdas helped reconcile the East and the West. We had a long episode telling that great story, and he also reconciled the Roman Church. But despite all this reconciliation, it doesn't mean that everyone loves everyone else. And in fact, the next Pope, St. John the First, who we're talking about today, is going to have to deal with the guy who felt most left out with this reconciliation, this love fest between all the different parts of the church. And that's the Arian king of Italy, Theodoric the Ostrogoth. But first, let's talk about St. John. John the First was born around 470 AD in Siena in Tuscany before serving in the Roman church, most likely as a deacon. In fact, there's a deacon John who is listed in the roles of the Synod of 499 and in the Synod of 502, called by St. Symmachus to deal with the Laurentian Schism. And so that tells us that John probably never went over to the Laurentian side in the schism that we talked about 2 weeks ago. He stayed faithful through all the synods there towards the Symmachian side. And we have another record of him in the works of the great philosopher and theologian Boethius, who dedicated some of his theological works to a certain deacon John, which probably is the same person. And just as an aside, Boethius is just awesome. He's the best. He was an official in Theodoric's court. He wrote some of the most beautiful theological and philosophical works of the time. He was eventually martyred in essence by Theodoric. Actually kind of comes into this story a little bit. And, you know, just again, as an aside, read The Consolation of Philosophy. It's what he wrote while he was imprisoned by Theodoric. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. It's a really wonderful read. It's fantastic. Anyway, enough about Boethius. Let's get back to St. John the First. He was elected Pope on August 13th, 523, and he's going to serve as Pope for just about 2 years, which makes sense. He's probably an older man. And during that time, we only have one real story from his papacy, and it's really fascinating and telling about the conditions in Italy at this time. So we got to go back to Theodoric. Theodoric was the king of Italy, and as you remember, his capital was in Ravenna, and he was an Arian as well, as were many of the Ostrogoths who ruled Italy. They had been converted by Arians, and they hadn't been reconciled after the Council of Nicaea. And there was always a tension between Theodoric in the West, in Italy, and the Byzantines. Now, Theodoric was very gracious and accepting of his Catholic subjects for a long time. In fact, his chief counselor was an Orthodox Catholic. His name was Cassiodorus. And it was fine. Everything was fine, so long as the Byzantine Emperor and the East were hostile to Rome, as had been the case for a while now. So because of that, you know, this political pressure from the East, from the Byzantines, the Pope naturally looked to Theodoric to kind of back him up and help him out. It didn't matter that he was an Arian, so long as he gave them some protection from the Byzantines in the East when they wanted to put pressure on the Pope to, you know, force the Monophysite heresy and everything. But now, this kind of calculus, this balance of power has changed because we have Justin the First, if you remember from last episode, who's an Orthodox, Pope-loving Catholic. He's now the emperor in Constantinople, and so now the Pope has a much better relationship with him than this Arian king of Italy, barbarian king of Italy. And so Justin gets to work in his empire, and he begins a policy of really promoting the Catholic faith and restricting Arianism. And this made Theodoric both nervous and angry, and so he decided to send a group of ambassadors to Constantinople to get Justin to make concessions towards Arians in the empire. Now, you might wonder, why does Theodoric care? He's got his own kingdom in Italy. Why is he worrying about what's happening in Byzantium? But though he's king of Italy, he was nominally still part of the Roman Empire. There was this legal fiction that the whole Roman Empire still existed and that these barbarian kings held their title from the emperor in the East. The emperor in the East was still kind of nominally in charge of everything. But in reality, that was a total fiction because Theodoric, he didn't answer to the king of the emperor in the East. He was king of his territory, and he got control of it. And the emperor in the East couldn't order him to do anything. But still, there was this kind of connection. And at the same time, there were greater cultural ties between the East and the West than there would be in later periods. There were a lot of Greeks in Rome, and there were a lot of Romans who made their way east. And so there was this connection. The Roman Empire hadn't split so quickly that there wasn't anything between them. And so Theodoric calls together this group of senators, as well as Pope John I, and he summons them all to Ravenna. And he says, Pope John, you're going to Constantinople, and you're going to seek lighter terms for Arians. And one of the things you're going to do is you're going to force Arians, who converted to Catholicism, to return to Arianism. And according to an anonymous history from the time period, Pope John responded by saying, "What you will do, O king, do quickly. Lo, here I stand before you, but this thing I will not promise you to, nor will I give the emperor your command. But anything else which you may enjoin upon me with God's help, I shall be able to obtain from him." John's unwilling to go, unwilling to push these Arian demands. He will try and make some concessions, but nothing that endangers the faith of people who have converted to Catholicism. But in the end, Theodoric forces John to get on the boat and to sail to Constantinople. And so when he arrives in Constantinople, it's not the response that Theodoric would have wanted. The response was a jubilant welcome from the emperor and his people. And they rush out from the city and they greet the Pope at the 12th milestone outside the city walls in honor of the apostles. And they rejoice to bring the Pope into the city. It's like the Pope's this conquering, returning hero. This is only like the first time the Pope's ever visited Constantinople, but, you know, Justin runs out to bring him in. And he hears the demands of Theodoric, and while it seems like he did lighten some restrictions, he, under no circumstance, forced Arians, who had been converted to Catholicism, to return to Arianism. And really, this visit had very little to do with these demands of Theodoric. It was just one giant celebration. The Liber Pontificalis tells us, "Moreover, Justin the emperor was filled with joy because he had been accounted worthy to behold the vicar of blessed Peter the apostle during his lifetime within his realm. And Justin Augustus was crowned gloriously by the Pope's hands." So this is a big deal. The Pope recrowns him emperor, signifying that his power in some way relies on the spiritual power of the Pope. And likewise, the Pope was given the honor of presiding at the Easter Mass at the great Hagia Sophia Church in Constantinople, which is such a tremendous honor because it's such a big deal that the bishop celebrates Easter Mass in his cathedral. And here, the Patriarch of Constantinople is saying, "No, I defer to the Pope of Rome." And after the visit was over, all the jubilation's done, St. John I returns to Ravenna. But his reception there was not as pleasant as it was in Constantinople. Theodoric was furious with the Pope and would have killed him on the spot if he hadn't been afraid of upsetting the Emperor Justin too much. You know, the visit seems to have done nothing to help him and only strengthened ties between the Pope and Constantinople, and he hadn't gotten any of the concessions he wanted. So Theodoric threw St. John I in prison, and John I died there soon afterwards, died from his poor treatment on May 18th, 526. Eventually, his body was returned to Rome, and he was buried in St. Peter's Basilica. But one final story, because as Pope John's body was being carried through the streets of Ravenna, this anonymous chronicle that I quoted earlier, it tells us that a possessed man touched it and was healed. And so St. John I was revered from an early time as a saint and as a martyr for the faith. Now, he's going to be succeeded by St. Felix IV, and we'll talk more about him next week. Thanks for listening, everyone, to Habemus Papam. You can check out the rest of the Catholic Bites podcast at catholicbitespodcast.com. There's lots of great things to listen to. Check out all our other options, and also find us on iTunes, where you can subscribe or leave a review. Thank you, and God bless.